Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Please like, share, and subscribe. It really helps the channel, and I appreciate it. This week, we hit the open road, well, literally and figuratively, with Jürgen Barbuska, whose new book, No Overnight Parking, turns a year-long van life experiment into a remarkable story of reinvention. After feeling the squeeze of an imbalanced work-life routine, Jürgen does what so many dream about, but so few actually attempt. He walks away from the corporate grind and climbs into a modest van he affectionately names the Shoebox, named later on the name changes, and sets off across the United States and Canada, armed with nothing more than a road atlas, a flickering check engine light, and a determination to rediscover his life on his own terms. What follows is a journey that's as much inward as it is across the miles. Jürgen wanders through small towns and sweeping landscapes. He navigates the quirky realities of overnight parking and learns often the hard way that van life isn't about the van at all. It's about the people you meet at the edge of the map, including a cross-country walking minister, the staff at one of America's last video rental shops, one of my favorite chapters, and strangers in big box parking lots who turn out to be anything but ordinary. No Overnight Parking is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about Jürgen, go to Jürgen Barbuska. That's B-A-R-B-U-S-C-A. JürgenBarbuska.com and follow him on Instagram and TikTok at noovernightparking_book. And Jürgen, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ira. Great to see you again. And you know what? You make me yearn for the road all over again.
And I do. I know. I was starting to, I was about to break out into on the road again, but I thought, no, you know what? I'll leave that. Others of that ilk. But all of us are that hear your story and read your book, as I have, are jealous and envious. But at the same time, we're reading it in the comfortable setting of our home, apartment, or at the library or wherever we happen to be. And yet you experienced it. And I guess the first thing we have to start out with is the transition you made from working a corporate position for many years and having the guts and determination to say, you know what, I've got to balance this all out. So tell us a little bit about your background and why you decided to make this move on the road.
Yeah. Well, just the short and sweet is when long hours squeezed the joy out of my job, I started searching for some alternatives, a way to relax. I discovered that a two-week vacation just didn't do it for me. So I began the process of looking for some options. I'd always enjoyed traveling. And I have always enjoyed the possibility of traveling around the United States. And I combined those two interests and but it took me about 5 years of preparation before I finally pulled the trigger and purchased a van and submitted my resignation.
It's a big step. Now, the thing that got me and it caused anxiety in me was the engine check light, because all of us have experienced at one point or another engine check light, but usually we're in an urban environment in our own hometown and we can get to a mechanic relatively quick, or if worse comes to worse, have it towed over there. You're in the middle of America and this engine check light comes on, not just once, not just twice, but was there terror when you saw it come up and you're in the middle of nowhere on the highway?
Well, the van was a 2003 Eurovan camper, and it was 16 years old, well taken care of, I might add, when I purchased it. But, you know, the inevitable occurred. And, when that light comes on, you wonder, well, you know, what does that mean? Do I stop right now, or can I go to the next, gas station or workshop or get it fixed? You scratch your head. In a couple of instances, I pulled into an AutoZone, and they have the ability to do a quick diagnostic to tell you right then and there, it's serious or it's a quick fix. So that's what I wound up doing several times.
And you became your own mechanic in a way. You ended up purchasing a decoder, or whatever you call those things, to plug into the van and see what the problem is. But that's just the minor stuff. The major stuff really is, I think, for those of us who read it and you who wrote it. And by the way, you didn't started this adventure with the idea of writing this book. It was only afterwards that you wrote the book. So you weren't plotting out scenes in your head for the book. You lived it, and then you decided to write the book.
I kept a daily journal. So I was writing virtually every day. And at the end of the trip, I said, you know, what am I going to do with all these notes? You know, I had 27,000 photographs. I had three volumes of a journal. And at the end of the day, I said, well, you know, I have to do something with this. And I thought my travels around the United States were unique enough in my own mind that others might enjoy hearing about it, reading about it. And that's, you know, when I pulled the van into the garage for the last time at the end of that trip, I got to work.
Well, I think the book works on several levels. So for those people who never plan on going out on an adventure, they can enjoy it vicariously through your book.
Yeah.
And then there's others that you give insight into what the realities are of being on the road. So there's that aspect. And then there's the philosophical or metaphysical aspect of balancing out work and life. And you found along the way too that, you know, you were busy driving to go points A, B, C, D, and E and trying to cover all the alphabet in 3 days. And that wasn't necessarily a balanced approach either. So I think you sort of came to that realization.
Well, on that point, I left my job because of a work-life imbalance, burnout. And what I found after, I don't know, about 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, is that road life wound up being a mirror for the workplace. In other words, there was such an interest in discovering the United States that I pursued it with the same passion that I pursued my work projects. And it wound up becoming go, go, go. See this, see the next spot. And it, you know, all day adventure. And it wound up being becoming similar to the sort of burnout I experienced at work. And I had to pull back the reins a little bit and say to myself, you know, ease back, or you're going to burn out on seeing America too.
So you did get that insight along the way because you realized this was coming internally, not externally, that the same passion you put towards your work, you're now putting towards your adventure on the road, and you're still being imbalanced by that in that sense.
Precisely. You know, the first 4 weeks was composed of, you know, outdoor camping and, you know, just kind of relaxation. But when I discovered there's so much to see in the United States, between, you know, museums, points of interest, the people you meet along the way, roadside oddities, and just the natural beauty of the United States, that I wanted to see as much of it as I could against a ticking clock, because I only gave myself, a year can go by pretty fast when you're on the road or doing any other sort of thing. And I wanted, you know, my goal wound up being to see all of the United States. And that's a virtual impossibility, but I did my best to try to do that, and wound up traveling 32,000 miles in just a year. So that's a lot of highway and a lot of byway.
When you decided to go on this trip and you bought the van, it's not exactly the most luxurious vehicle in existence, especially the way you outfitted it. So along the way, there are some times where you didn't want to bother taking the bed down. You just slept on the floor. There was not a lot of room to do certain things. So that, I guess, added to the sense of adventure, but you were still able to enjoy the exterior or external world despite the cramped nature of the internal accommodation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the van had some amenities that made living inside it less like it wasn't glamping, but it was also not your typical roughing it. I chose to live in it in the way one might consider a hotel room, as just a quick place to, you know, get some sleep and a shower and off you go again. And so what you're referencing is, kind of my go-go-go nature, where the dinette table, which takes maybe all of 5 or 7 minutes to set up, wound up being 5 or 7 minutes that I could spend doing something else. And above, you know, beyond that, in order to set up the dinette table, I had to move other things inside the van. You know, it was 17 feet long, but it was full of stuff. Right. So I did it in the most expeditious way that I thought would allow me to have breakfast. And that wound up just eating, you know, breakfast on my lap in a bowl or a plate. And but it didn't deter my fun or my adventure.
Right. And you were able to shower in various gyms that you were a member of a health club that had nationwide affiliates. So you were able to take care of that as well. I want to talk about a little bit about some of your major experiences and people you've met. But before that, let's talk about the title of the book, No Overnight Parking. I know where that comes from. A lot of people yeah. don't realize that little benefit that a certain store offers people, not every store. It's up to the manager of a particular store. But why don't you fill us in how you decided to title the book, No Overnight Parking, which is a great title for a book, I think.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thanks. You know, the title is really in the first order. It's a reference to those signs we see everywhere. You know, if you remember that song from the 60s, you know, sign, sign, everywhere a sign. Well, you know, when you're out living on the road, you do run up against these signs that do not allow parking. You know, they're private lots or private property, and you can't park there.
Well, you but can it, park there, you just can't park there overnight.
Okay. Precisely, yeah. You can't park over.
Clarify that, all right.
But it wound up also, in the way that I titled the book, it wound up also being a reference to the unpredictable nature of driving on the road. So it went beyond just overnight parking to the things one might encounter during the day while driving from point A to some other as yet determined point B. So the unpredictability of life on the road was another way that the title was trying to reference my experience.
But you were always able to find some place to park, which in a way, I mean, you had the van, which allowed you to sleep in it if you, you know, in order to take care of that. But you seem to always be able to find a place to go to eventually, whether it's not in the city limits or in the city limits someplace. You got very crafty in terms of being able to figure these things out.
Well, what's that phrase? Mother is the necessity of invention. You know, when you're tired, you will either pull off on the side of the road with traffic buzzing past you, or you'll find a place in a field of sunflowers or next to a water tower or a lighthouse. Or it can be urban parking in some neighborhood. I also overnighted in the parking lot of a hospital, at a park and ride facility in Ottawa next to a sports arena. So it really covered a wide variety of places. But when you're tired, you'll sleep.
But I referenced the store chain that allows parking in their facilities overnight, not at every store. But tell us how you discovered that and how that worked out for you along the way, along your path.
Yeah, well, that particular chain of department stores.
You have the name. I just didn't want to. I figured you would want to mention it.
Oh, well, Walmart. Sam Walton was a passionate RVer, and he extended the ability for RVers to overnight on his property. So it sort of became a destination for anybody traveling in an RV or a van or an automobile, you know, whatever. So it wound up being a spot. I discovered it really purely by accident. You know, one might think that I had 5 years of preparation. I might have heard about that ability, but I didn't. I didn't uncover that until I was actually on the road. And again, you know, purely by accident. And then, you know, just a side note, while the corporate policy is to allow parking on its Walmarts throughout the country and in Canada, because I did overnight there as well. It's up to the individual store manager. So you'll find at some Walmarts, you'll come across a no overnight parking sign. And when I did, I just moved on because I felt there was a reason behind it. And I looked for the next place.
If I had to nail you down to the wall there to tell us the top three experiences you had, I referenced a few, but those may not be your top three. So what were the top three experiences? There's a lot of experiences in there for the people that read the book. But for you personally, what were the top three experiences, either locations or people you met or both? And if you want to make it more than three, that's okay.
Well, let's see. I'll just throw out one place as an example, Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls, I had always envisioned Niagara Falls as a 1950s honeymoon spot. And so.
So you got married there. Congratulations.
Well, actually, I didn't get married there, but I might consider it after having visited Niagara Falls in person and experiencing what it offers, the five senses. I might consider it as a place to honeymoon. You know, water at Niagara Falls, tumbling down into the Niagara River from the upper to the lower levels, it offers a sound that nothing else like water can offer. It was just really a magnificent sight to behold. Another spot, if you will, it's not necessarily a spot, it's the open road, a highway. I traveled for about a week on US 2, which as it travels through Montana is called the High Line. It's the northernmost east-west highway in the United States, you know, at some points just 20 miles from the Canadian border. And it's so peaceful to drive. Montana and North Dakota, it runs through North Dakota as well, do not have a lot of population. And consequently, there's not a lot of people on the road. And it's just very relaxing to drive and look out, you know, around you and see the landscape and the open sky. It's just a wonderfully peaceful drive.
But is there ever a case where you had all of a sudden cattle crossing the road? And you had a I'm thinking of the road from Las Vegas to Ely, where it's open road too, but every so often there's cattle crossing or cows coming across, and you just have to brake because you don't want to hit them, because it'll be more damage to your car than to the animal. Well, to but still, that's why I was curious whether you ever encountered one of those experiences on that open road.
I did in Glacier National Park. And in this case, it was a herd of buffalo.
Well, that's a challenge.
And it's a challenge. And there were probably 20 or 30 cars coming in each direction. It was the summer, so naturally the high time for the tourists. And buffalo, you know, they just cross the road when they want to cross.
They roam where they roam.
And that's right. And so we all came to a standstill. One came so close to the van, I had rolled down the window. I'd never been that close to bison before. I could have reached out and petted it. But honestly, I stuck my head out of the window because I thought it was going to scrape the side of the van with its horns. And I don't know what I would have done had it done that. But that was my encounter with a large animal.
Pretty good. Now, in addition to, I was fascinated by your answer about Niagara Falls, because of all the places you've been to in the book that I've read and all the people you've met, Niagara Falls to me is sort of like, as you said, you think of it as a 1950s honeymoon spot. And so there'd be so many other places that would be more unusual, but that really had an impact on you. But how about the people you met? I alluded to a few in my opening, but for you again, and it doesn't have to be the top three, it could be just one, but who was either the most or a couple of people that were the most interesting, maybe because of the nature of how you met them, what they were doing, where you were, who made the most impact, or maybe even they imparted some philosophy to you to help you understand it all?
Well, I'll tell you about one of the most unexpected encounters that I had was there was one in Sturgis, South Dakota. Sturgis is the motorcycle. Every year. Yeah. The Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. And there are roughly 400 to 500,000 hobbyists who show up there. I was there about a month before the annual rally. And I was just cruising around town, you know, and hearing, you know, loud exhaust because, you know, it's still a destination. It's a beautiful place to ride. The highway, the byways, the roads around through the Black Hills are quite interesting to travel. But on this particular day, I pulled in front of the in front of a saloon, and it was open parking. And I just pulled into the first available slot. And next thing I know, a Henry Fonda type in a chopper pulled up and parked his front tire of his motorcycle some 4 or 5 feet away from the front door. And trust me when I say that my throat got dry because I didn't know if I was in his spot, if I was on his turf, did I do something? Did I cut him off? I had no idea. And he says to me with a cigarette bouncing off his lips, he says to me, hey, bro, your passenger side headlight is out. It was the last thing I expected. It was just a common courtesy, a common road courtesy, but I expected something else. So it was a little unexpected. But you referenced a cross-country walking minister. He was on his way from Miami to Seattle. And here I was in Montana. I had pulled over just to look at the panorama. I was outside the van. And then next thing I know, I hear a voice, "Where are you headed?" And it scared me a little bit.
It would unnerve anybody in the middle of nowhere. All of a sudden, you've got somebody approaching you. Yeah.
Yeah. He had a road worker's vest on. But he didn't have a flag. I didn't see any cones anywhere. So I didn't know, you know, is this guy crazy? Is he a lunatic? What does he want from me? He had a cap on from his church. But, you know, anybody can get a cap from any church anywhere. So but it wound up that he was actually walking across country to raise attention for adoption of children. He himself had been adopted. And this was his way of kind of spreading the word, not what I thought originally.
Amazing. And then also later on in the book, you talk about coming across a chapel that was on wheels, but nobody was there. And then you thought about having that guy that's walking the highway maybe take over that church. So that was an interesting aspect of your adventure as well.
You know, it's the things you discover when you're on the road. When you're living on the road. And I pulled into a truck stop outside of Grand Rapids and a 76 truck plaza. And, I love big trucks. And I happened to, while I was looking for a place to spend the night there, I happened to pass one that was off to the side of the main, the truck scale. And it said Mobile Chapel across the side, not something I was expecting. As it turns out, this particular organization had a truck stop ministry and truckers who spend up to 8 weeks on the road away from their loved ones, away from their, you know, church, synagogue, mosque, what have you. They still have a desire for, you know, hearing the good word, if I can put it that way. And the mobile ministry was an organization whose volunteer ministers offered that good word. And it was quite a unique experience for me, something I don't see here around our city of Las Vegas. I've been to several truck stops here. But I hadn't seen anything quite like it. But you do see it elsewhere in the United States.
If I asked you what you wanted people to take away from reading your book, what would you consider the best couple of things? Maybe there's one thing, there may be several things that you want people to take away after reading your overnight parking book.
Yeah. One thing is to just perhaps travel without an agenda. That's what I did. I didn't have anywhere I wanted to go necessarily. I just drove the open road. And when I saw something that looked interesting, I went to see it, got back on the road and did the same thing maybe 10 or 20 miles down the road. I just traveled according to what I wanted to see. The other thing might be to follow your curiosities. You know, if, and again, you know, that's what I did. Saw something that looked interesting, whether it was a place or an individual, happened to run across a farmer who was baling some hay. This was in North Dakota. And I take that back. It was South Dakota. And it looked like he was experiencing some trouble. And I was curious, well, what sort of trouble is this farmer experiencing? And I pulled over and had about an hour's chat with him. So my two takeaways from the trip, something I might offer other travelers is, you know, kind of number one, follow your nose. Just go see what's out there without an agenda. I enjoy doing that. And then follow your curiosity, because there's lots to see out there in a country as big as the United States.
And just as important, there's really no age restriction. You're not a teenager, but you decided to do it. And, you know, with today's technology, from the communication standpoint, from the transportation standpoint, you could make this happen even if you're not in your teen years or in your early 20s or 30s or even 40s. You can do it whenever. If the spirit moves, you could make it work.
And I've heard about and watched videos produced by 80-somethings who are traveling the road because it's something either they've been wanting to do their entire life, or because they've been, for some reason, squeezed out of their home, or maybe they're just looking to stretch their retirement money. And living on the road is an inexpensive way to do it, given that you don't, you know, you carry your home on your back, so to speak. So it is age unrestricted. And if you're in your working years, a lot of folks, individuals since the pandemic have been digital nomads. So they take their work with them on the road and they work remotely in a van or a camper or an RV.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Jürgen Barbuska. He's author of No Overnight Parking. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about Jürgen, you can go to Jürgen Barbuska, B-A-R-B-U-S-C-A, JürgenBarbuska.com, and follow him on Instagram and TikTok at NoOvernightParking_book. And Jürgen, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for this opportunity, Ira, and maybe I'll see you on the road sometime.
Hope to. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.